The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Financial technology, or fintech, is one of the fastest-growing industries in the world today, with New York, London, Tel Aviv, Edinburgh, Singapore, Moscow, and other major cities all vying for a piece of the action. Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first dedicated radio show that focuses on how this new boom is changing everything, from the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Now, here's your host, Brett King.
Hey guys, well, it's actually host today. We have with us Liz Lumley, who is going to help me host today because we've got a lot of guests on the show and Liz is a bit of a domain expert. Liz, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Brett. I'm really, really happy to be here with Startup Bootcamp FinTech taking over Breaking Banks.
Absolutely. So, you know, we're going to talk about Startup Bootcamp. Before we get to that, just a quick couple of news items. We have interesting news. Square, who is IPOing this week, they'd originally set their price in sort of the $11 to $13 range. Now they've priced their IPO at $9 per share, which gives the company a price tag of, it must be close to $3 billion, $2.7 billion, I think, is the figure, if my memory serves. So there's a little bit of discussion about what this means, isn't there, Liz?
Yeah, there is. I mean, actually, I saw on Twitter that it was inching back up to about $11,
okay,
I think.
But
yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't want to be sort of pessimistic. I get a little worried when things are a bit too bubbly and overpriced and valued. I mean, Square is a pretty interesting company, so maybe this is just a more sort of measured outlook of the fintech space.
Both of Jack Dorsey's companies valued at billions of dollars with negative revenue or negative margin anyway. But so this is interesting. We also see the blockchain stuff continues to heat up. Mm-hmm. CommBank has stepped forward and said they're going to do some stuff on blockchain. So there's still plenty of room. The question is, you know, I guess one of the questions is, are we in a bubble? You know, with the flattening of Square and things like that, is it starting to level off? What do you think, Liz?
I don't think we're in a bubble. I mean, I remember the dot-com boom, and it's a very different feeling. You know, there were a lot of people in the space just to get rich and make an exit, and every company was a dot-com. I think there's a different mindset right now, and there are a lot of people in the space that learned those lessons. So maybe we're in a little bit of the hype cycle, but I wouldn't call it a bubble personally.
No, I agree. So that's sort of the major news. I can't think of anything else that's been. Oh no, the Apple.
Oh
Pay
no,
thing.
There's huge.
We didn't talk about the Apple Pay P2P stuff. And we'll get to your news in a second. But the Apple P2P stuff, that's obviously got tongues wagging. Now that happened sort of, I think it was late last week or early this week. So we missed it on last week's show. But you know, if I was Natcher, I'd be really concerned right now. In the U.S., you know, because there's Dwalla's obviously hasn't got the traffic right now for it. Venmo is a pretty good competitor in the mobile space, but if you want, you know, and this is an example where the banks have delayed and delayed a response to all this real-time money movement demand that's coming from the market, and then they're going to be really upset when they have to pay Apple to use their service for the same, right?
I don't think Apple will be upset.
No, Apple won't be, but the banks will be upset. But what was the news you were going to add?
Startup Bootcamp FinTech had its demo day for its 9 startups last week in London. So it went extremely well. We did what we called a silent demo day format. And so what we do is we have a series of pitches from our startups. So we gave everyone headphones, and it was eerie. The whole hall was quiet. As everyone listened to the pitches, it was very, very interesting. And then, of course, also we announced that we launched to New York. So we are fintech here at Startup Bootcamp. We are aiming for global domination. So we have London.
Who's representing you in New York?
It's a man named Jesse Podell, who's well known in the fintech space in New York. He's the MD, and I'm sure that when we talk to Nectarius, he'll give us a bit more updates on.
Well, let's do that. So Nectarius Leolius, if I get that right, he's the founder of Startup Bootcamp. And Nick, welcome back to the show.
Hello, Brett. Thanks for having me. Yeah, and well done on pronouncing my surname.
No, I'm well founded in my Greek from my Melbourne days. You know, I lived in Melbourne, and Dikana skala.
Nyakara, nyakara.
You know, Melbourne reportedly, I don't know if this stat is true, but I've been repeating it ever since I was probably 15, was considered the second largest Greek city by population, because Athens was number one and Melbourne was number two at one point, and then Thessaloniki. But I think it's probably changed now, but in the 70s, I think that was probably the case.
It's absolutely true.
Yeah, sir. So tell me about Startup Bootcamp, because you're the founder. Tell us about it. I mean, Liz has given us a bit of a brief on your activities recently, but tell us about how Startup Bootcamp came to be. Obviously, you're focused on the fintech space, but how did it emerge? What does it do?
Well, I'm the founder of Startup Bootcamp Fintech and Insurance, so we're focusing on the fintech stream. Startup Bootcamp overall has been around for 5 years now, and it's a global network of accelerator programs focusing on different industries. We started fintech in London at the beginning of last year with the intention to bring in a different kind of type of player in the environment, in the universe, because we felt that there's a need for an accelerator that uses a traditional model of working hands-on with startups, but funded by industry players who actually understand the need for innovation and what is required to actually do the innovation as opposed to just talk about it. So people who have innovation appetite but also innovation capability.
That's pretty cool. Now, there's a bit of a connection here with our friends at InnerTribe as well, isn't there?
There's hopefully a big connection. So a lot of what we do is driven by the spirit of InnerTribe, because I was part of the InnerTribe cult. For 3 years of my life, I was the producer of the InnerTribe Startup Challenge that is still around. So that was the first time when somebody actually launched an initiative that looked to bridge between the entrepreneurs on the one side and the financial industry players on the other side, at a time where fintech didn't exist as a term. So we started in 2009 with that. So yeah, absolutely. And the spirit of using a collaborative initiative to work with entrepreneurs is very much driven by what we did with InnerTribe.
So I know I had a question, which I think is would be good for you to go into a bit more detail on about. When working with the big banks and large institutions, what's sort of the difference between an appetite for innovation and a capability for innovation?
Well, everybody wants to do something nowadays, and some organizations have been trying to make sense of the process, trying to make sense of the technology changes around for a while, but some have just kind of clogged onto this and they're running around like headless chickens. But the appetite overall means that everybody's trying to understand, how do I engage with startups? How do I learn from the new technologies? Does blockchain make sense for me? Well, how would I do this? But very often it stops there. It stops with a question mark. When we talk about capability, we're talking about organizations like our partners, Lloyds or Rabobank, or who are part of the program, who actually have processes in place that allows them to connect with entrepreneurs, to run a proof of concept, or a pilot, because that's really what both sides need. The startups need that because they need that credibility check and validation. And the banks need that because that's the only way they can actually really figure out if the technology makes sense for them. And a lot of organizations don't have that. They don't have the right procurement processes that allows them to actually bring in new technology.
Tell me about it, man. As a startup working with bank partners, the number one problem is procurement departments. I tell you, and if you guys are listening to this, if you work for a big bank and you've got these ideas of working with a startup, just think of this problem. When a startup comes to a big bank and says, "All right, we want to work with you," you treat us like Oracle. And, you know, we've got a team of, 40 or 50 people if we're a big startup, and we don't have any legal experience. It's a complete waste of our effort and time. It's the wrong thing for us to be doing is trudging through contracts with procurement officers.
Oh, yeah, I know. Yeah, the worst thing to do is to send a startup a 100-page document.
I know. Sorry, I just had to say that, Nick.
You know what? I think that should be a trademarkable slogan. Procurement is one of the biggest obstacles in innovation for innovation in the financial industry. And we see the same thing happening in insurance now. But also, organizations don't have test environments. They don't understand what APIs mean. They don't understand how they need to provide people with real data to play around with. So there's a lot that comes into the bucket of capability that I think is really important.
What about, in terms of the evolution of this process, we see a lot of people talking about hackathons and incubators and things like that. But now that this is maturing, what changes have you guys had to make practically to give this a little bit more traction and, practical
I think it's a couple of things. One of them is that the companies we work with on the industry side are a little bit more educated, but they're also still very keen to learn from how the others do it. So the collaborative element of the partners sitting around the table and actually learning from each other is a key thing. The other one is that people are really, really thirsty for linking whatever they're doing internally to the outside world. So providing our corporate partners a channel to bring in mentors, to bring the startups to pitch in front of their own internal audience. It's a key thing because ultimately, if we're looking about the evolution of the industry, the culture change is probably still a very, very big obstacle. It's a big hurdle. And our partner banks and other partners, they use us also to kind of encourage internal processes. But at the same time, it's also important to see that organizations have changed their structures, right? Having something like Lloyds Digital, which is a body within the bank sitting in the center and having a team that scouts startups and goes to the business lines and says, do you want us to experiment with this? Where we're taking away some of the processes from the core business lines is also a really important one.
So do you want to introduce the first of your startups that are on the show, joining us on the show today?
Yes, it's going to be. Yep. Oh no, go on.
No, great.
Cool. I mean, we had 9 teams this year, and what was kind of interesting that we see as a trend is 5 of them were focused on the asset management space, but we're going to talk to them later on in the program. So the first bit, our startups that focus a little bit on the payments arena and blockchain, of course, and the first startup we're going to speak to is called Cybertonica, and it's Joshua, who I think he is on the line.
Hey, Josh.
Yes, I am.
Cybertronica sounds like something out of
an Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Cybertronica sounds like something out of an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie.
Yeah, well, it actually Cybertronica is a way of saying juice up your drink with Cybertronica, right?
Okay.
So, yes, we're payments related, and it was interesting to hear all that you were saying a moment ago because it certainly applies to us, particularly with the way you spoke about working with big organizations. And one of the things that we're trying to do is free up the e-commerce and mobile commerce space from being tributaries to those big organizations that manage things like fraud, which is where our specialty comes in.
So you're specialists at fraud or anti-fraud?
That's always the first question we get, but you have to be good at one to be good at the other, right?
True.
So you have to understand where the fraud is coming from in order to prevent it. And what we did was we took a singular approach. So we used 3 real-time data streams to both prevent fraud, but much more importantly, end what we call the tragedy of the abandoned cart in e-commerce, which is about 30% of all transactions due to the current day's authentication systems. So what we do is we use artificial intelligence to blend browsing histories, transaction histories, and biometrics from the devices to be sure who somebody is before they get to that payment page.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, no, I mean, one of the things that really impressed us about Cybertonica, and it should be noted that you guys are technically a Russian based startup, but you had absolutely fantastic case study from some use cases in Russia. I don't know if you want to sort of go through some of those.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things we did was we helped a major telco in Russia to increase its revenues by $36 million in a single year simply by pinpointing a certain type of fraud that they were unable to unearth with their state-of-the-art systems. And this was fraud that was reported through the Visa and MasterCard system. So we knew right away that we were onto something, and now we're trying to share that in a kind of independent hub. You were talking about Apple and Apple Pay, and basically what we say is software is going to eat the banks and Apple's going to eat everything else. So what we're trying to do is be an infrastructure, a piece of stable, independent infrastructure, risk-based authentication that anybody transacting on the web can link into and use to both prevent fraud and increase their conversion rates.
So how important is things like tokenization and these sorts of technologies working on now moving forward to protect us from fraud?
Well, it's not just fraud, of course. It's also privacy. So all of our work is within the framework of a compliance system that protects privacy by using just tokenized information and even the biometrics and the advertising data that we consult to get browsing histories related to transaction histories is all non-personal. The importance of tokenization is it allows us to see a transaction history without identifying the person doing the transacting, so that person's privacy is protected.
Yeah. Liz?
Yes, yeah. No, I mean, Cybertown have got a lot of attention from people in the industry, and we were kind of joking with them. They had an interesting mishaps on demo day, but we kind of with
it made Clifford, us more popular.
Yeah, it does. It's kind of like rain on your wedding day, Joshua. So
the
you
blue
were
screen of death.
We had clicker problems, but it was they're going to be very successful in the future.
Well, we've tied up about 7 new contracts since we started here in London. So we've created a UK based company that bought the Russian technology and company, and we're already talking to some very high branded, let's say, infrastructure partners in the payment space. And what we can do beyond that is also very interesting, of course, because with the same type of technology, if you have the agreement of the user, the permission, that is, you can also provide very good credit scores within a few hundred milliseconds. So that downstream is something that we can also look at.
Well, that's, that whole credit scoring business has got to change pretty dramatically over the next, couple of years based on data.
I agree with you. I think the whole thing is that, in fact, the way the e-commerce and the way the online world is developing, in a way, the banks and the big structures, as you said, not just procurement-wise, but in terms of the ability to innovate, they're simply not adapted to that speed and that speed of development. We're working right now with a market in the Near East where the card penetration that went from 30% to 75%, and online purchases are growing 35% a year. So this is trillions and trillions of dollars. There's $100 billion a month of online purchases now, and it's growing still by 20% worldwide. So
So listen, we did have a question for Nick, but he's had to run off, which was from Gayla Boscovich, but maybe Liz, you might want to tackle it given that, or we asked Josh to jump in, which was, what's the appetite versus capability for innovation in big banks?
We were actually talking about this today. I mean, one of the questions we always ask our partners that work with Startup Bootcamp FinTech is basically that. I know a lot of banks are very interested in, let's get us some innovation. We need to see what the trends are. But that's a big difference between having them be able to work with the startups. Can a startup come in and play in the sandbox and do a pilot and do a proof of concept during the time of the accelerator? And when you talk to large organizations and you ask them that question and they give you an answer like, 12 to 18 months, that's not a partner that we can work with. Someone like Lloyds and Rabobank, I mean, Rabobank took some of our startups to Holland to talk to people in the bank to sort of get the ball rolling on some of these pilots and proof of concepts. So those are the type of partners that work really well with our type of program.
And that's one of the things that I say as a startup founder when I talk to banks. They say, why should we work with you? And I say, because we bend space and time. Because if you guys did this yourself, it's gonna take you two years, maybe 2.5 years to get where we are today, and it will cost you 5 or 10 times what it will cost us to do it for you as a partner.
Maybe 20 times.
Exactly.
I mean, we actually had a bank say to us after I've been involved in several of these types of approaches to changing the way data is used in banks, and one bank in a loyalty thing that we did said, well, actually, just the proof of concept you did over the last 2 months, it would have taken us 3 years to do. So that's, you know, that's 20-1 practically.
Okay, so Liz, let's get to the next boot camp.
Yes.
Who have you got coming up?
Thanks, Josh.
So before I introduce Gene, I mean, might it be noted, you know, blockchain is going to be a trend in fintech for a very long time. And we had over a third of all the companies that applied to the Startup Bootcamp program this year were cryptocurrency blockchain related, and one made it through to the cohort. They're called Dreidel. Gene's the CEO, and they tackle KYC in retail banking.
Hey, Gene, welcome to Breaking Banks.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be with you.
Yeah, great. So you call yourself the Instagram for KYC, or Know Your Customer. Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
It's actually an interesting story. When we started with the Startup Bootcamp 3 months ago, Liz and another MD from Francisco, they insisted for us to focus on one thing. And we had to make a really hard choice whether to keep that Instagram for KYC in the front end or cut it off and focus just on our back end, our network. And we decided to keep it. It's just this piece that actually sells the whole solution that we're making. And why we're calling it Instagram for KYC? Because KYC is a major pain for the banks. And this Know Your Customer.
I've got a one-liner for you that I use when I'm doing my talking head stuff around the world as a futurist. I say to banks, two things. One is I say, in 5 years' time, if you can't deliver every product in your product suite in real time over mobile, you're screwed. That's the first one. And the second one is, the riskiest thing you can do as a bank today in terms of risk is put a piece of paper in front of a customer and try to identify them with a human. Because the algorithms are so good now that it's 5, 10, 20 times better at doing IDV digitally than we are with a person in a branch looking at documents.
Yeah, great point, actually. Many banks that we're talking to right now are evaluating the completely digital onboarding process. And this is where we come in. Let's make it so easy for the customers, like Instagram, to get to the bank, to start talking to the bank, and for this onboarding process to be seamless.
And it's got to be revenue. It's got to be all about the revenue. I saw a quote from Wells Fargo on the Clearinghouse where he did an interview, the CEO of Wells Fargo, the other day. And he was asked what's the future of branches. He said, for now, we still need them because we don't know how to make revenue on other channels. You know, and so you've got to fix this to be able to generate revenue, right?
There's another problem. The regulators, are they ready to actually let banks do fully digital onboarding? And banks are not sure.
They're getting there. I think if you ask the regulator for permission as a bank,
I agree.
I think they'll say yes.
Banks need to talk to the regulators a lot more. They kind of blame the regulators for having to deal with customers in the way they do, but it's kind of a cop out.
Yes, indeed. So where did you come up with the name Dreidel, Gene?
We believe that the blockchain is just huge change in the market, something that happens once in 25 years. And we believe that the internet will morph into a trade net. And we're not going to be just trading in the larger sense, doing commerce, but tradeling. And that's where the name.
Tradeling. Okay. I get it. Yeah, it's good to name these things. So, Liz, who have we got on next? Gene, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Quickly, where can we find out information about Dreidel? Dreidel.com or
.io.
.io. Okay, great. Thank you.
Excellent. Perfect. Yeah. So we've got our own version of Eastern European Steve Jobs coming next. We've got Vitus, who is CEO of Warpay, and they're tackling that sort of area between sort of mobile wallets and the merchant experience, and enabling order and pay and remote payments. So I'm going to hand it over to Vitus, who can explain it much better than I can.
Hey, Vitus, welcome.
Hello, guys.
So you were talking about your stats is that on average a Londoner spends about 12 minutes a day queuing for drinks and lunchtime food. And your goal was to give this time back to the customer. How do you do that?
So yeah, we were on mobile payments area as Liz introduced us. The difference from Apple Pay and probably the most guys that you hear the most, they are focusing on proximity payments, what we call, what you pay at the counter, at the cashier, usually using NFC as technology. And that's fine, it works well, but we found that mobile payments could be a bit more than that. We can pay with mobile phone when we are far away from the counter, from the staff, where we want to pre-order our coffee when we are still walking to the coffee shop, for example, or have a sandwich, or buy a ticket when we are far away from ticketing machine. So that's where we focus basically on remote mobile payments. And yes, this one stats that we basically looked what is the most annoying factor for people and waiting for things when you really want to give money to the merchant. You know, I want to give the money, please take it, but they don't. They force you to stand 12 minutes until you can get that money to them. I think this is actually a problem that can be solved, and we are solving it, and it brings value both for the merchant because he gets his money much faster, but it's actually where we start seeing where mobile payments actually are adding value for the consumers. It's not anymore just third payment type. I came to the cashier and now I'm picking, am I paying with cash, credit card or mobile phone? It's just a third type of payment. But here we're saying we are providing totally new service, pre-order, pay remotely, pay when you're not at the cashier, where payment is actually just integral part of the service that we provide basically. I like to use that example. Is Uber a payment app or taxi ordering and tax experience app? I think all would say that this is tax experience app where payment just happened to be integral part of it, which you don't even kind of notice. So that's how we want to move remote mobile payments. We believe that we should stop talking about remote mobile payments a lot, but talk about services we provide where payment is just a hidden piece of it.
So I've said this for a long time, and I got a lot of criticism on this, particularly on your old employer, Liz, on Finextra, which I was saying that the most efficient form of a payment is that it disappears, it becomes invisible. Right.
Yeah.
And yet people are like, so there's a lot of people who are, you know, incumbents who make their money off the friction in payments, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, there are a lot of listeners of Finextra that are in the payments business. So
yeah, it's true.
they don't want their job to disappear.
So you were just recognized as one of the FinTech 50 hottest FinTech startups to watch in Europe. That's a huge huge kudos. What are you guys, where are you at with the product? Is it live? Give us a bit of an update on
you need to buy this. You need to talk Brett through the pilot you did with the merchants on White Cross Market and also the coffee shop here at Rainmaking Loft as well. So talk about some of the successes of that.
Yeah, cool. So actually, we are live in Baltics, in Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia for almost 2 years now. We use that market to. We are from Lithuania ourselves. Actually, calling from here, from Vilnius now. So we our live solutions up and running here, and we tested many different scenarios in petrol chains, in restaurants, in coffee shops, in arenas. And basically, we use this market to learn where this remote mobile payment is actually used. And for example, from Stats perspective, we got in the biggest arena in Central Eastern Europe, 18,000 seats, 15% of all orders being placed remotely through the system because people love not queuing for their beers, but getting it fast and without queuing.
Who wants to queue for a beer? You just want to drink a beer, right?
Yeah, and from the staff handling the beers perspective, they managed to handle 2.4 times more orders during that 15 minutes break between the game. So just imagine how much more.
So it increases revenue and
exactly.
If anyone's listening right now and you're on Twitter, there's a couple of startups in California who are doing this. You know, you can pay at the table and this sort of stuff. I can't remember who they are right now, but if you can think of them, tweet them out. But all right, so listen, we just got a minute before we go to break. So just quickly, how can we find out about Warpay?
It's warpay.com. That's the main source information. Yeah, and just to finalize, we're not one more or kind of an ordering app. Basically, we are back-end solution aggregating any payment institution. That's kind of the biggest differentiation factor. So our aim is that you would be opening your banking app, actually placing that remote order from it. So that's kind of the big differentiation from many existing pre-ordering or remote ordering apps. We're not building one more. We are aggregating existing payment apps on it.
Cool. All right. Well, look, thanks for that. Just a quick shout out. You know, thanks for joining the show again. We appreciate it. Just before we go to the break, a quick shout out to Temenos, who is our global annual sponsor. For you guys, if you don't know Temenos, they deliver core banking, payments, analytics, wealth management, digital channel stuff, and they've been a fantastic supporter of the show. So that's great. Now, let's just go to a quick break, and then after the break, we can get back Money Fellows. Yep. And we've got a few other of the startups to talk to as well.
Exactly.
Great. All right. We'll just take a quick break, guys. You're with Breaking Banks. We'll be right back in a moment. This is Brett King, the host of Breaking Banks. We've got some exciting news for you. We've just joined with Radio Everyone and the United Nations on their Global Goals Initiative. Now, this is a 15-year plan to address 17 specific goals to end poverty, fight inequality, and fix climate change. So, Breaking Banks, we're planning a special episode on October the 1st to talk about the organizations around the world that are using fintech to increase financial inclusion, to eradicate poverty, and reduce inequality. Join us at Breaking Banks and the team at Radio Everyone on the UN Global Goals Initiative to end poverty, fight inequality, and fix climate change.
When you're looking for the right place to eat, there's an app for that. When you need directions getting there, there's an app for that. And if you're trying to make a healthy choice, there's an app for that. But what about an app that tells you how you're doing with your money? Now, there's an app for that. It's called Moovin', a free app and debit account that automatically tracks your spending. You get real-time feedback with every purchase you make and a debit account with no overdraft or monthly fees. So if you want to stay on track with your money, download the Moovin' app for free on iPhone or Android and check out Moovin.com. That's M-O-V-E-N.com.
Today, make that long overdue call to your bank and thank them. Thank them for a checking account, one that has a minimum balance and penalties for going below it. Thank them for a savings account, one that has almost no interest and charges statement fees to let you know it. Most of all, thank them for overdraft fees and all those other fees you never even knew existed. Thank them today. Why? Because the future of banking is here, and it's not just what you want, it's what you deserve. Moovin is a free app and debit card with no overdraft, ATM, or monthly fees. Best of all, you get an instant receipt every time you make a purchase and daily feedback on your spending so you can always be on top of your money. So make that call to your bank and say thanks, but no thanks. And when you're done, download the free app and get Moovin today.
What do you want your world to look like in 2030? This is Rachel Morrissey, the producer of Breaking Banks, and we are joining the UN Global Goals Initiative and participating in Radio Everyone this week from September 25th to October 2nd. Global Goals is a 15-year plan to address 17 specific goals to end poverty, fight inequality, and fix climate change. To find out more about Global Goals and Radio Everyone, go to www.globalgoals.org.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Breaking Banks featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag Breaking Banks. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. I'm your host, Brett King. Hey, Liz, I've got an idea. We should start a meme based on that Ronda Rousey UFC fight about how what a fintechs are doing to banks.
Yes, I know we should.
So, hey, if you guys are following the talk today, you can catch us on Twitter, hashtag Breaking Banks. Up now, we have we're talking to the Startup Bootcamp fintech participants in their demo day. And right now, Liz, introduce us to the next company.
Well, this is interesting. I know that innovation is all about what's new and fresh, but Ahmed's startup is called Money Fellows. It's our only B2C startup, and he's taking a 2,000-year-old concept of how credit and savings and bringing it into the 21st century, and he's got a really great story behind it as well.
So this is a model they call Rosca, but I hadn't heard of it before. So, Ahmed, do you want to explain it?
Yeah, hi, Brett. Thanks for having me first.
You're welcome.
So, yeah, I'm Ahmed, founder and CEO of Money Fellows. And just a small story was Money Fellows is actually behind my movement from Egypt to Germany 7 years ago. Okay. And where in Germany I started facing all those new complex financial problems, like no access to credit, no credit history, lack of saving options, and things like that. And back home, we've always had a great solution for all those problems, which is doing an offline money circles with friends and family. And that is, yeah.
So there's different names for this in different countries, right? Like India calls it chit funds, Tanda exactly. In Mexico, Gamia. Is that the Arabic word?
Exactly, yeah.
Mafi Mushkila.
Exactly. So this concept is like 2,000 years old, and it's still very common in over 89 countries and communities around the globe today. The problem is that they're still doing it the old hard way, so it's completely offline, it's limited, it's organized in a piece of paper and so on. And that's why moving from Egypt to Germany, I thought this model should really be digitized to help me at least do money circles with my friends and family back home.
Yeah,
I like that. No, it's okay. I mean, it's interesting when you see how money circles are done in communities like Egypt and in the notebook and written down with paper. But you know, the way you described it, this is very much a social element to these money circles. You know, how do you sort of keep that social community element in the digital model that you've created?
So we even enforce it. I've done money circles offline in Egypt, back in Egypt, for example, and I not necessarily had to know everyone in the circle. I usually got invited to join the money circle by one of the circle participants. But now being like having it digitized, just like on LinkedIn, you see who's connected to who and who got invited to this money circle through who. So it's very, very transparent, very organized, and above all, you get to really see who exactly is in the circle and where his slot is and so on.
Yeah, and I'd like to say also, we actually did a money circle here at Startup Bootcamp, so we all got involved in a pilot with you as well.
Yeah, it reminds me of some of the other, like the Hawala network, which has also been a big part of sort of money transfer and things like that. And Abra, I think they base their business on trying to digitize the Hawala network. So I think there's an interesting idea here. So tell me, Ahmed, how are you going with the business? Where are you located? What's the traction like?
So right now we launched a private beta 2 months ago, and we started by inviting 37 users. We are there, and via personal reference, there are now 120 paying users doing money circles on our platform. So we publicly launched on demo day a couple of days ago, and we're right now working with a couple of distribution channels to offer their existing clients our solutions, especially the migrant communities and
So where can people find out? Can people join the private beta through invite, or how does it work?
Yeah, sure. So they would like just join moneyfellows.com and add their emails, and then we're having like a queue and inviting people, time by time.
Cool. Cool.
But you're also going into sort of colleges and universities in the UK as well to spread the word that way, correct?
Exactly. Yeah. So
it would be an interesting model for student funding, actually, community based. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So we've even met a lot of people here that funded their studies through Money Circles.
Yeah, it does happen informally, doesn't it?
Exactly. So it's all happening informally, and that's why I want to do it like more of a formal way or an easier way to bring it to their mobiles and laptops today rather than just having them meet in a cafe every single month and exchanging cash there. Yeah.
That's how Bitcoin started too. Physical meetups, people trading.
Exactly, yeah. And I mean, apart from just Money Circles, in the future we get to have a lot of data of people, their behavior in Money Circles, and we get to actually score people and give them a lot of benefits they could use further by just doing Money Circles with their friends and family on our platform. Yeah, we also give them a lot of like discounts and offers from commercial partners for them to spend their payouts.
Yeah. Well, thanks for joining us, Liz.
Thank you.
And we'll keep watching Moneyfellow. So Liz, who's up next?
Who's up next? Well, actually, you know what? We hear a lot about fintech hubs, and of course, we all know London is the fintech capital of the world. But
we're not going to get into that, right?
Well, a city that comes up a lot is Tel Aviv, and so we've got a startup from Israel called Bondit. Aaron, the COO, is online, and it's bond allocation. Bondit's the first of our five asset management focused.
Right, I noticed that all these companies we're going to talk to for the rest of the show are all in the asset management space. So that's pretty interesting. So Aaron, welcome to Breaking Banks.
Thank you, Brett. Happy to be here. Thanks for having us.
So you look at bond portfolio management lifecycle. For someone who doesn't really know what that means, how does Bondit work?
So first, even for people that don't really understand it fully, a lot of your savings are in bonds in one way or the other, through your 401k, through investments here and other. So it is actually something that impacts each and every one of us. That's why it's the largest market in the world. It's $100 trillion. One of the things that happens today is that even though it's such a huge market, it's still managed in the same way that it was managed a couple of decades ago. So it's very, very error prone, and it's very serving for the side that you're less interested in, which is the banking side, and less your side. Put differently, you're not getting the tailored portfolio that you should be getting that is custom fit to what you want and how you want it. You're getting what probably the counterparts providing service for you want to give you.
Yep. Okay. Liz?
There was an interesting story you told at Demo Day about how you validated the market. And I think I remember a slide saying, but we were wrong. I just want to know if you wanted to talk a little bit about some kind of your journey through the accelerator.
Absolutely. Initially, when we started, our focus was basically everything started because we all, just like Ahmed, had somewhat of a bad experience when we talked to our advisors and asked them to create a bond portfolio for us. It was such a frustrating process, and it took them well over a week to come back with exactly what we didn't want. Now, a bunch of us are fairly intelligent, so we put our heads together and we figured, we can use the machine learning PhD guys that we have lying around and the big data analytics guys we have lying around, and maybe we can create something that's just much better. So instead of having to wait a week, we can get it in 90 seconds. And once we've done that, the next step was to identify the market. So we thought that we're going to just basically give it out to any person out there in the world that wants to build a bond portfolio. That's the point where we actually, in the last 3 months, figured out that it wasn't the right market for us. The right market for us is actually to focus on the larger financial institutions that already have millions of clients and can stand to benefit right now from our solution by improving their client experience and by basically helping them come to the 21st century in some ways and using these tools.
Come to the 21st century. We have cool tech. Yeah,
exactly.
I saw a good joke about that, and I tweeted it a while back. I don't know if you saw it. Someone said, "You'll need to fax it," and the response was, I can't fax it because of where I live. And they said, where do you live? In the 21st century.
It's not 1996. Very good.
All right, great. Awesome. Well, Aaron, thanks for joining the show.
Thank you very much.
We'll keep an eye on Bondit and see how you guys are doing. Who's up next, Liz?
Next, we've got a powerhouse team from Canada. So it's a cloud-based investor relations portal. The product's called FundBinder, and the company's called Obsidian Solutions. And their co-founder, Sasha, is on the phone. Hi, Sasha.
Sasha, welcome.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for having me.
So you've got background in accounting. You worked for PwC in their audit practice. So how does that tie into what you guys have built with Obsidian?
Yeah, absolutely. So at PwC, I was specifically focused on asset management clients. So I've worked with hundreds of different hedge funds and mutual funds and really kind of seen their deep-rooted problems in the operations. And that's what we solve with Obsidian.
Okay, so where are you guys at right now in terms of the platform? Are you guys live? Are you working with some big banks?
So we are live. We've successfully launched the platform with our first client a couple months ago before coming to Startup Bootcamp. And we've also got a few extra paying hedge fund clients. And then during the program, we've been really focusing on developing channel partnerships here within London. And we were successful in getting one here. So we're kind of ramping up and on our way.
That's good. So can you say who your partner is?
It's a small consulting agency. Yeah, they're called Folio Neil. And essentially, they're a bunch of ex-banker guys, have amazing connections, and we're really excited to work with them.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Liz? It was really great during the program. I mean, we're a mentor-driven program, and it's great when we see our mentors come in and get really passionate about the companies. And you guys had a bit of a coup at Demo Day that your mentor that you worked really closely with, Ian Benn, you know, sort of said, this is where I'd put my money. So it was a big deal for you guys. How did that feel like? What did that feel like?
Yeah, I think he's been amazing. We've really been able to grow our business through the time at SBC, specifically working with Ian. He's been an integral part in that. But it was really great because he just kind of summed up all the reasons of why he likes working with us and why he's actually kind of putting his money into the business. So, yeah, I think that kind of was one of the better feelings kind of to end the program.
Oh, hey, listen, I also saw that you took a mining company, you IPO'd a mining company. How do you think mining is going to get disrupted? I know it's completely off the track, but...
You know, it's actually interesting you say that. They're actually taking a trend in technology. As you know, the smaller resources space is kind of not doing the best, especially in kind of the startup guys. But I see a lot of the players that I've been following taking more of a tech approach and how they're going to be innovative in the mining space using technology. So I think technology is just everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Sasha, thanks for joining us on
Breaking
Banks.
Great. Thank you so much.
Keep us in the loop of how you guys are going.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Who's up next, Liz?
Up next, as you know, we're a global program, so Delio are our Welsh startup. So we've got Gareth on the phone. He's actually behind me right now. He's also our tallest CEO at about 6'5". So. Cool. Yeah, very true. Very true. So, yeah, they're a Welsh management. They're a Welsh management.
Well, they are. Technically a Welsh management as well.
But. I'm going to stop talking now, and I'm just going to let Gareth explain the company.
The Welsh management of wealth management, yeah. Yes. Something like that. Hi, thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
Okay, so Delio is looking to help connect ultra high net worth investors with the private markets. We've looked at the change in demographic of what a wealth creator is today as to what they were 20 years ago, but we believe the products and services being offered to these clients in wealth management, for example,
a digital OTC?
Or it's essentially addressing the pain points that a financial institution has in the private market, and what stops them from offering them to their clients, and then addressing those challenges and helping them provide a more well-rounded product offering to their client base.
It's one of the reasons why you sort of started this company. It was this idea that what type of client goes to a wealth manager, that client has changed and they have different needs from the way the wealth management industry has worked for the past 30, 40 years.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, my background sort of corporate finance, M&A, and worked, spent a bit of time in a larger firm and then worked with a small boutique. And a lot of our customers were more owner-managed entrepreneurial businesses. And these were guys who'd started businesses from scratch and gone on to make significant sums of money. Yet they weren't perhaps this type of client that would engage with traditional wealth management product offering. So we wanted to help banks use what they already have within their networks to engage with those clients, and in the same way, provide those clients with the access to more hands-on things that they want to see.
Yeah, very cool. And you're based in Wales.
We are indeed.
You're focused more broadly.
Yes. We're very globally focused. We're very, very in the longer term, creating the idea of being able to connect opportunities in Europe with potential high net worth investors in the Middle East and helping the institutions do that. So we're definitely not limited to just Wales.
So, where is your high net worth client base from then? Are you saying it's partially from the Middle East and partially from the UK? Or?
Yeah, so it's a client base of a global financial institution. Our clients are financial institutions of of all sizes, have a role to play in this connected ecosystem we want to build. Rather than traditional open marketplace, it's enabling institutions to control exactly what opportunities go into their networks and what opportunities leave their network.
So, Gareth, quick question before we move on to the next couple of Startup Bootcamp demo day participants. How do you think artificial intelligence is going to screw up the advisory business?
I think there's a definite part to play as we're seeing moving, especially in the mass affluent area. We're speaking to a lot of wealth management institutions on our travels, and a lot of them are saying the same thing about the impact robo-advisory is on sort of low margin, high volume products in this area. I think there's also a big role for the institutions now to play in enhancing what they're doing for their clients, which I think is why the private markets represents a significant opportunity of enhancing their presence.
But it might, it's anywhere there's advice, there's a potential for AIs to do it better, theoretically, if you can codify it, right? So it's going to be an interesting time.
Sure. No, I guess it will be very interesting to see how it pans out.
All right, great. So, Gareth, thanks for joining us. Where can we check out Delio?
So our website's deliowealth.com, deliowealth.com. You can check us out there and find out more.
Great, fantastic. Okay, Liz, who are the last two that we've
got? The last two. I'm going to call them our disruptive startups. Okay. So we've got Tom Beavers from Stockviews, and we've got Gilliam from Walnut Algorithms. Now, Stockviews is our London-based startup, and he's taking on the big banks. He's crowdsourcing equity research, taking on the sell-side research from the likes of Goldman Sachs and JP Morgan. And Walnut Algorithms are using AI that you just mentioned before to recreate intraday trading and improve on it and make it better. So why don't we start off with Tom? I mean, Tom, do you see yourself as taking down the Goldman Sachs and JP Morgans of the world and disrupting the equity research market?
Piece by piece, hopefully. So my background was actually as a customer of the equity research that those guys produced. And I set up the company very much out of frustration with the poor quality of research as I saw it, the lack of differentiation, the conflicts of interest across the sell side. And I wanted to do something about that to create a platform that would completely change the way that the sell side industry works.
Okay, cool. And so you're sort of disintermediating brokerage firms, basically.
Yeah, that's exactly the case. So what we're trying to do is to connect the talent on one side with the consumers of that talent by disintermediating the bank. So in the US alone, the sell side industry has downsized from 18,000 people roughly 10 years ago to 9,000 people today. So that's a huge amount of talent that has semi-retired, that's still out there, that has a huge amount of value to add, but is being underutilized. So it's ex-sell side analysts, it's industry, ex-industry executives, it's small boutique firms. These are the kind of individuals and firms that we're trying to get onto our platform and link with fund managers.
Great. That's really interesting. Now, Ghulam, you know, on the AI side, you know, you're in the asset management space as well. You talk about alpha strategies. Are you talking about alpha ratios, or what's an alpha strategy?
Yeah, an alpha strategy is a strategy that's not correlated with the market. So we do intraday trading. Why? Because machine learning needs a lot of samples. So when you train a machine to trade, you need it to have a lot of experience. And we look at every second of the market over the past 10 years to teach machines how to self-learn to trade the markets.
And so here's a question for you. Why are machines better than humans at trading?
Yeah, so machines can look at, you know, what calculators are better than humans in making multiplications. Well, they literally are. We have a very tiny brain, unfortunately. And machines can
speak
look
for
at,
yourself.
I don't think you do.
Yeah, machines can look at terabytes of data and make a decision within a microsecond.
Absolutely.
And this is really why machines, if they have all the information available, will definitely make better decisions with no emotions, with unlimited memory, with incredible computer power. So
I would say, I mean, I think you guys were very much influenced by what happened at DeepMind, correct?
Yeah, DeepMind Technologies was out of UCL. They created algos capable of playing video games expertly, very quickly, better than any human can play them.
Computer
has already beaten the human in chess, right, a while ago. So why not in trading? Why not in investment management? I think a bit like cars. At some point in the future, people will ask, why did we leave billions under management to emotional people?
Yeah, this is one of the advantages. You know, AIs don't have biases, right? Some would say they don't have ethical considerations either, but that's just a matter of learning.
Right? They're very rational, I would say.
Yeah, okay, so listen, guys, we've got about a minute before we close. So, Tom, where can we find out about StockViews?
So it's very easy to find. It's simply stockviews.com.
That's good.
Tom is also excellent on Twitter, so follow StockViews on Twitter. He's very good.
Okay, fantastic. And Ghulam, what about Walnut Algorithms?
Walnutalgorithms.com. That's it, with an S.
Fantastic. And Liz, thank you for helping me out today on the show.
No, thank you so much for inviting us.
There's going to be some time in the near future where I'm stuck on a plane somewhere and I might need you to help out actually doing the show on your own.
No worries, anytime.
Fantastic. Thanks, guys, for joining us. This has been another episode of Breaking Banks. If you want to check out our epic episode. If you want to check out some of the previous episodes, go to breakingbanks.com or check on iTunes, Stitcher, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Thank you for joining us. We will be back again next week. And thanks again, Liz.
Thank you very much.
Okay, see you guys.
Been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time for more of the latest in fintech news.